Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Brent Magnuson. Brent is a U.S. Army veteran who served as a combat engineer. He's also a best-selling author, speaker, and sits on the board of the Resilient Warrior Foundation, which serves U.S. veterans and first responders who suffer from PTSD. So welcome to the show, Brent. I'm glad to have you on.
Yeah, man. Awesome to be on. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you bet. For the listeners who may not be familiar with you and your background, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Someone doesn't know about me? Oh, God, my ego is being crushed and humbled as we speak.
There might be one or two.
I appreciate it again, man. I appreciate the time. I appreciate what you're doing with the podcast. And it's always interesting to get two Army guys on Zoom and then hit record. So yeah. Hopefully this goes well. But
we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. So for the 99.9% of the population that does not know who I am, I'm Brent Magnuson. I was born and raised in the rough middle-class suburbs of Chicago. And yeah, I was a sports guy growing up, martial arts guy growing up. And like the vast majority of males in my family, I had a calling, if you will, to serve. And pretty much knew it was going to be the Army. And yeah, I was fortunate to enlist and get to serve with some amazing people. I was a combat engineer with the 94th Engineer Battalion Combat Heavy. Spent most of my time stationed out of southern Germany in Bielsek. I was fortunate enough to deploy. I got to hit Bosnia, did a little skirmish and support some cool guys in Macedonia. Then our unit deployed to Kosovo in 99. And then late 99, I got banged up a little more on training up. And got medically discharged, healed up for about a year, year and a half. And then after that, unfortunately, things kicked off in the Middle East and found that there was still a purpose. Because for a lot of us that get out, especially there's the guy that wants to be the weekend warrior, although I don't like that term. Then there's the guy or the gal that wants to put in a full 20 plus some and just get after it every day. And I wanted to be that guy. And unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. But I was able to do some contracting and still contribute in that capacity. And after that, yeah, I became entrepreneurial and doing some executive protection stuff so I can still kind of get after it a little bit. And in addition to that, I obviously have the book, Roger Up. And yeah, we have a big event called Roger Up Class 01 coming up September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Chicago. We can talk about that a little later, but that's kind of my story. Got married 4 years ago. I have an awesome wife. Super cool stepdaughter, and yeah, I like jumping on airplanes and doing jiu-jitsu. That's about it.
Yeah, it sounds great. Lots of interesting high-intensity activities you got going on there, right? But you're also, I mentioned this in that intro, you're also on the board of the Resilient Warrior Foundation, and I'm interested to learn about that foundation and what it does and really how it helps the veterans in this community.
Yeah. So that's one of the things I'm actually most proud of is RWF, or Resilient Warrior Foundation. So this is actually one of my patches, our patches for it. I'll send one out to you. So this, whenever someone gets signed up with us, we send them one of these and they put this on their jiu-jitsu gi, like you can see over here. And so what RWF is, Resilient Warrior Foundation, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. And essentially what we do is we sponsor or pay for the jiu-jitsu memberships for combat veterans or just veterans that have PTSD and first responders that suffer from PTSD acquired in service to this incredible country. And the simplicity of it is you hear about us, you contact us. If I'm not busy, I'll usually be the one reaching out to you. And when I talk to these guys and gals, it's, hey, what'd you do? Where'd you serve? Send us a DD-214. Let us know if you're service connected or not, and we'll get you hooked up. If you've never done jiu-jitsu before, I speak Army, I speak jiu-jitsu. Let's look at a school in close proximity to your home, make sure it's a legit school, and let's get you training. And so that's the awesome part about it. My good friend, Matt Davidson, we met training jiu-jitsu together. We both got our purple belts, I think about 3 years ago together. And he's like, hey man, you have a big platform. You should come on board. You do a lot of speaking and I know how passionate you are about this. So you love the military, you love veterans, and you love jiu-jitsu. So let's do this. And it's been great. I've been able to help them grow. And it's just the most rewarding thing. And I don't get paid a dime for it. And I put a good amount of time into it. And I sleep so good at night because, and I hate to get long-winded here, but I'll be as brief as I can. The most amazing thing about the Resilient Warrior Foundation, and again, keep in mind, competitively speaking, and I'm a very competitive guy. So I don't like to use the word competitive and nonprofit in the same sentence, but I'm competitive. And I know that we're in the same big pond or even ocean, if you will, with 40,000 other nonprofits in the veteran space or niche. So there are other great organizations out there doing similar things to us. So it's very important, one, that people are donating money to any organization that's legitimately helping veterans. For example, I went down and did hyperbaric oxygen therapy in Florida with the 22 Project, and that completely changed my life. Headaches, hearing loss, sleeping issues, things that I had dealt with for years. 80 dives later, my sleep has never been better in my entire life than after 80 dives in an HBOT tank. And if it wasn't for the 22 Project out of Delray Beach, Florida, paying for everything, including your flight, your hotel rooms, a month of dives, 40 dives in 1 month, 2 5-days a week. So there's amazing nonprofits in the veteran space that exist out there. And what we're so proud of and what we're doing is for the people that have never trained Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or for the people that have never heard of it, In very short, it is, in my very humble opinion, as a guy who's been doing martial arts on and off for probably 25 years, it's the most effective form of self-defense. And it's probably in a one-on-one situation, not just for a male, but for a female and a child, the most practical way to fight, or more importantly, get out of a fight or a bad situation. And as we transition out of the military, whether we had 15 combat deployments and lost half of our friends, or we did, 4 years and never deployed, but had a sexual trauma or saw something horrific happen or whatever it is, that readjustment period back into society, into the civilian world is difficult, especially the longer you've been in. You don't have someone telling you what to do anymore. You don't have someone telling you where to be, what time to be there. And most importantly, you're not held as accountable. There's no one I know that can hold themselves as accountable as the entire United States Army can, or the Marine Corps can, or the Navy, or the Air Force, or the Coast Guard. So you have this camaraderie that's built in. And the longer you're in the military, the longer you're in that framework, the more it becomes normal. And for guys and gals that have been in there for a long time and then they get out, this world is very, very scary because you're basically able to do whatever you want. You're almost like a kid that just got left home alone at 9 years old, and there's guns in the house and there's a hot stove that works and there's scary things and you don't know what the hell to do because no one's telling you what to do. And it's easy to fall into that trap of maybe getting a little lazy. Maybe I'm going to take 6 months off. I put my time in. I'm going to try and figure things out. Maybe the bottle starts becoming a little heavier than it was. Maybe medications from the VA become a lot heavier than they were. We all know how many pills the VA likes to throw in. And the next thing, you're drinking 5 or 6 shots a night to go to sleep. You're on 5 or 6 prescription medications. Things are spiraling out of control. Relationships are struggling. You're starting to really, really isolate and push people away. And the whole time, you don't know why. You can't figure out what the fuck is going on. And the beautiful thing about jiu-jitsu is it teaches you, it reteaches you, the veteran, how to start dealing and managing anxiety, dealing with anxiety, and how to start managing and dealing with tough situations. So for example, if you're a new guy and you're 160 pounds and you go to your first jiu-jitsu class and you start learning, and then a few weeks later, they let you start actually training and rolling with another person, and you're a 160 pound guy and you're 5'10". And you just happen to be rolling with a guy that's 6'2", 240 pounds. And he's probably on what we'll call performance enhancing stuff. And he's mean and he's nasty and he sweats a lot. He probably hasn't showered in 2 days. And he's on top of you and he's trying to strangle you, but you're surviving. based on the techniques that you've learned, based on the leverage and the different things that you've learned, you're using all of that to manage that. And you survive this gorilla of a guy trying to do bad things to you. And what that does and how that carries and transforms you out into the other world and how it carries over into other aspects of your life is incredible, because it reteaches you how to confront all those dragons and all those demons. It reteaches you how to manage and deal with anxiety and stressful situations. And it's, for me, I mean, since the day I got out, I've been chasing vigorously that camaraderie. I mean, I remember, and I'm sure you would agree, there were guys I knew in the Army. I mean, I was deployed less than a year after I was in. I'd been deployed for the first time. And I knew guys for 1 year in the Army that I trusted more than I did guys I grew up with my whole life, because we were that close.
Yep.
And it's hard to replicate that. And you ask any veteran out there, if they tell you they missed the gunfire and all their shooting, they're crazy. Stay away from them. 99.9% of the guys and gals you meet that were in the military, the number one thing they're going to tell you they missed is camaraderie. And the closest thing I've found, and I have scoured the flipping planet for it, is jiu-jitsu. And it's unbelievable. And I'm sorry I got so long-winded, but I'm so passionate about it. I know what it does for veterans. I know what it does for kids. I know what it does for women. I know what it's done for me. And being part of RWF is one of the things I'm most proud of in my life.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you went through that and all the overview of really how jiu-jitsu helps the people who are dealing with PTSD and coming out of the military, searching for that camaraderie, because you're absolutely right. The people that I've spoken to, and we're over 200 episodes now, so I've talked to quite a few people just on this podcast alone. A lot of people say the same exact thing, that they came out of the military, they're looking for that camaraderie, and they don't know where to find it. They start a job, and they feel like they just don't relate with the people that they were working with, or they are involved in things in their neighborhood and other civilians that are, they're not non-veteran civilians who are in these groups and stuff. They feel like they just don't have a good relationship with them. And when you take people who are working towards a common goal, right, you're learning jiu-jitsu and working together, helping each other out, that builds a sense of camaraderie. Doing the same thing that you were doing in the military. I mean, obviously not the same exact thing. You're not preparing for combat necessarily, but you are preparing for your own personal defense, and maybe you're defending your family and helping your physical condition and things like that. So there are some parallels there. That's maybe not 100% meshing together with the military, but definitely parallels. But that image that you described with that big mountain of a man on top of you trying to choke you out and everything, the thing that really clicked with me was that in that moment, you don't have time for the other stuff, all that other noise that's going on in the world. You don't have time for the flashback memories that you might have been dealing with. You don't have time.
Have you ever jumped out of an airplane?
I have not, no.
Okay. Well, when you do, and I hope you do, then if you want to go, I don't know where you're at, but if you want to go, let me know. Because anyone that ever goes with me, I pay for their first jump. So if you ever, my new friend, decide to jump out of an airplane, I was hoping you were going to say yes to that, so this would all make sense. But anyways, long story short, when you jump out of an airplane, I promise you, you are not thinking about baby mama drama. You're not thinking about your bills. You're not thinking about some ex-girlfriend or some ex-boyfriend. You're not thinking about how much your kid's braces are going to cost. You're not thinking about anything. You're thinking about, one, I'm literally the closest I'll ever to be to Iron Man right now. And two, I hope when this thing says 5,000 and I pull, that chute opens.
Right.
Because I don't want to have to rely on my reserve. So it's the same thing with jiu-jitsu. And you said it beautifully. When you're in that situation and you're managing that stress and you're dealing with a very serious situation, two things are happening. One, you're getting retrained on how to do all those things. But two, and it's something you alluded to, is you're doing something very similar to that you did in the military, which is the number one thing that builds that camaraderie. And that is, you are enjoying that suck together. And that's the best part. I have people ask me all the time, like, what was basic training like? Or what was this school like? And it's funny, like the guy that wrote the Forward Sweat books, a good friend and mentor, his name's Jason Redman, spent 21 years in the SEAL teams. And I was never in the Navy, you know, I never went through BUDS. And I asked him, like, what was the toughest part of going through BUDS? So it's like 6 or 7 months and there's Hell Week and you see it. It's like, it sucks. Like every picture I've ever saw of anyone in BUDS, they don't look happy. And it's a fake smile if they are smiling. And I asked him what the hardest part was. And he said, seeing the finish line. He said, the reason most of the guys quit is because they look too far ahead. He said, the best advice I ever got was just get to your next meal.
Yep.
Just get to lunch. You get to eat. And then the next 4 or 5 hours might really suck, but just get to dinner. And then guess what? They're probably going to let you get some sleep. Just get to breakfast. And that chunking method is really cool. And it's the same thing in jiu-jitsu. Just get through that roll, survive, and then just get through the next one. And the way that transfers over into other areas of your life, most importantly, your confidence. And as men, I'm speaking specifically to us as males, our egos are constantly in need of humbling. And it may not be the most polite term, but for me, when I think of jiu-jitsu, I think of two things. The most effective form of self-defense and fighting, and the thing that does the greatest thing for the male ego, and it's also the greatest douchebag filter on planet Earth. Because I have seen it. Because I've been in jiu-jitsu for well over 10 years. I've seen it. I've seen the 230-pound steroid guy come into the gym and some nerdy 160-pound accountant-looking guy who's been training for 4 or 5 years longer than him. They train. And the little guy who looks like some nerdy accountant, nothing against accountants, they're important, strangles the silverback gorilla on enough steroids to make a prime Ronnie Coleman jealous. And that guy doesn't come back. So it does an amazing job of filtering out the type of people you don't want knowing how to legitimately strangle and break arms and all those things. So
right.
It's a beautiful martial art. It's just a beautiful thing. And it's a beautiful thing when you see what it does for veterans and especially the ones that stick with it and just the leaps and bounds they make in their life, all based on the principles they're getting and the benefits they're getting from jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it's amazing just to see the benefits that people get when they try something new and branch out and step outside of that comfort zone. We all have our comfort zone, the things that we're familiar with, that we're comfortable with, and that we like to do every day. And when you just do those things that keep you comfortable, you don't grow and you don't get to heal in certain ways or make strides towards a better life when you just stick in that comfort zone. Unless you're really comfortable with being uncomfortable, you're not going to be making any progress with anything there.
Not everyone's right. David Goggins. David right. Goggins is a very, 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 very rare breed. And as much as I love Goggins, it's difficult for me to get fully on board because there are very few people like that on the planet. It's like if we're talking about horse racing, we're talking about Secretariat, who I think is the greatest racehorse ever. People say that he didn't do very well at stud, but the problem is you can't reproduce. Michael Jordan's kid was never going to be as good as him. Tiger Woods' son, who's hitting the ball really well right now, is never going to be Tiger. Walter Payton's son was never going to be Walter Payton. And you're not going to recreate that beauty. But I'm off on tangents.
No, that's fine. I get that point because it's something that it is hard to recreate. And when you get it, you have to do what you can with it. And I think that's what he's doing with his ability to be comfortable with the uncomfortable things that he does through his life. Right.
Exactly. So, and you're right about there not being growth either. And the problem is when we were in the military, we constantly had, whether we were living in the barracks or living in a post or whatever, even if we had the weekends off, like we constantly had someone telling us we have to get together as a group in the morning and do PT. And you may not have wanted to do it, but you're just like, well, 28 other guys have to do it. So fuck it. I'm just going to go do all these pushups. I'm going to run 3 miles. It's going to suck, but everyone else has to do it. So I'd have to do it. When you're out and you're alone and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're in your apartment by yourself, and things aren't looking so well, and you can't sleep, and the bottle's there, and everything else is going on, you don't have those 20 other guys and a squad leader and a platoon sergeant and whoever else telling you, hey, get your ass out of bed. We got to go get after it. You don't have anyone doing that. You don't have anyone calling you. I don't care who you are. Unless you're Goggins or like maybe three or four other humans on planet Earth, you're not going to make yourself, when you're that low, get up and get out of your comfort zone. Your uncomfortable is not going to exist. You're going to continue to stay as comfortable as possible and isolate and all those other things. And that's what jiu-jitsu does so effectively, is it gets you so massively out of your comfort zones. The vast majority of our population, brother, is civilian, specifically speaking about civilians, but some former military as well. The vast majority of human beings are not used to someone grabbing their shirt and putting their hands on them. The right. vast majority of human beings are not used to having to put their hands on someone else. And if it happens to them, they're petrified. They have no idea what to do. So just walking down the street, knowing that if that ever were to happen, you're comfortable with it. Knowing that if you got into a scrap and you ended up on your back, you're comfortable being there. Like, most people are not comfortable on their back unless they're like a hooker, or even they're probably not that comfortable. Like, most people are not comfortable on their backs. And to know that you're okay if something really serious happens, you have to protect your life, your friend's life, God forbid, your family's life. And it just, I told my nephew this once when he asked me, when the book came out in 2020, he said, hey, Uncle Brett, do you have any superpowers? And he was like 7 or 8 years old at the time. That's a normal question for like a 7 or 8 year old that just saw Iron Man or Thor. And I said, actually, yeah, Carter, I do. And he looked at me kind of funny and I said, I do, and I'm not lying to you. I said, I know Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that's a superpower. And he's like,
yeah, absolutely.
It's a superpower. It really, really, really is. And if it's used kind of like the Force, don't mind the Jedi tattoo. I'm a big nerd. I didn't use that in my opening, but yeah, I'm a huge nerd. Just like the Force, man, like, it can be used for good. It can be used for evil. But if it's right. used in the right ways, jiu-jitsu is one of the most powerful personal development tools on planet Earth. And it's never even thought of that. It's just thought as a martial art. Mm-hmm. But it's from a personal development or a personal improvement perspective or personal growth perspective. For me, it's like top three things on the planet.
Yeah. And just want to circle back to that point that you made about when you're in the military and you got to get up for PT, or you got to be at a formation, or you have to be somewhere, you have to do something. People are telling you what to do. And if you're not there, I know for me anyways, if I was running late for something, I felt like I was letting the whole team down. I was letting everybody down. Right. And when you're talking about jiu-jitsu and you're getting together with people, it feels like it would be the same idea, where it's like, okay, if I'm not going to show up today because I'm just not feeling like it, I'm feeling down, I'm feeling low or whatever, I'm letting other people down. And so I'm going to be a little more motivated to push myself to go because I don't want to let other people down. Yeah. And it's kind of weird how that happens. I might be willing to let myself down, but not other people. And so,
yeah.
In that case, I'm still going out. I'm getting the benefit, the physical benefits, the practice, all that kind of stuff, and the camaraderie. I'm also not letting other people down. So it just feels like it's the right thing to do. Whereas if I was just leaving it up to myself to go for a run for exercise or something, and it's a little cold out, it's a little, you know, what I could come up with a thousand excuses not to go out for a run, right? But if I knew someone was going to be there with me and that they weren't going to get the exercise in if I wasn't there, then I'd know that I'm letting that other person down or that group of people down. And so I'd be much more motivated to get up and get my ass moving to get that done, right?
100%. That's why we're doing the Roger Up event on September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And if you look at the website, rogerupevent.com, you'll notice all three nights, there's an introduction to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Each morning, there's PT with Navy SEALs. And so you start the day out at 5:30 getting after it, and you end the day with something positive like jiu-jitsu. And throughout the day, we have amazing speakers, breakout workshops, VIP mastermind dinners. And myself and Jason Redman, along with a really good friend of mine, Sifu Alan Baker, we sat down and we essentially designed this whole thing around everything you and I just got done talking about. How can we, for so many people out there that don't have that leadership mindset, don't have that military background. For those people out there that just got so consumed by the pandemic and were essentially locked up for 2+ years, one, people are starving for something like this because they actually want to get out and be around other like-minded people. But I think why I'm so excited about this event is because it's needed. People need to get out of their comfort zone, get comfortable being uncomfortable. We've got all these cool little sayings, embrace the suck, Roger up, man up, woman up. But at the end of the day, it's just about getting the fuck after it and trying to be 1% better every day. And I still have to do that. I still have so many things that I need to work on. And you could do this podcast with me if we're both still around in 40 years when I'm in my 80s. And I'm going to be saying the same thing. I'll probably not be quite as handsome and I'll probably have a lot less hair, but I'm still going to be telling you, man, I still have stuff I need to work on. I still need to work on this. I still need to work on this because it's constant growth. And if we can just inspire change, if we can give them that spark, if we can get people that have never even heard of jiu-jitsu because of the seminar to go out and try it or to embrace a morning routine and actually focus on what they do the first 30 to 45 minutes of the morning. And that's what they take away, or whatever it is, with the amazing speakers that we have and the structure that we have for this event. I'm just so excited for the people that are coming, for the people that have already bought tickets, and for the people that are going to buy tickets and eventually be there on September 1st. It's so exciting for me because if I wasn't putting on this event, I know it sounds weird, but I would have already bought a ticket to it because it's, even for a guy like me that surrounds himself with all these personal development people, it's stuff that I still want to do because I always have stuff to learn. I'm constantly trying to learn stuff. All the people I surround myself with, excluding like my family and my wife and my friends, like the five people I spend the most time with, they're all smarter than me. They all make more money than me. They're all faster than me. They're all stronger than me. They all shoot better than me. They all speak better than me. Most of them probably swim better than me. It's just constantly trying to level up. And if you're hanging around five guys that spend more time at the bar than they do at the gym, it's only a matter of time to you're number six. If you're hanging out with five people that are always the proverbial crabs in the bucket, and every time you start doing something good, like, hey, I just started this new podcast. Oh, God, you only got like 3 views. Really? Well, what are you doing? Because I'm done with your negativity. I'm going to surround myself with positive people that want to celebrate my wins, not trying to pull me down. So we're going to talk a lot about circle of influence because it's something that's so important to me. And when I started realizing that, it's embarrassing now to talk about it, but I spent so long focused on what people thought about me. And I think maybe it's because I'm getting a little older now. I'm 46 and I just don't give a shit anymore what people think about me. I care what my wife thinks about me. I care what my stepdaughter thinks about me. I care what my dad thinks about me and maybe 4 or 5 other people. And to be respectful to your podcast, I care about what you think about me. But besides that, if someone doesn't like me, if they don't like my salmon-colored shirt with a flower pocket, my wife bought this shirt. So if the podcast doesn't do well, we can blame her. But at the end of the day, I just have to stop worrying about what other people think of me and focus on the stuff I can control. You know what I mean? I can't control what's going on with Kanye and Kim. I can't control what's going on in the White House. I can't control these gas prices, and God knows I wish I could, but I can control how I treat my family. I can control what time I get up in the morning. I can control who I decide to spend my valuable time with, because it's the most valuable commodity we all have is our time. And I'm not anymore. I refuse to. And I drew this line in the sand a few years ago. I'm not going to spend any more time with people that don't want to celebrate my wins, that don't want to see me level up and don't want to see me become better. I don't have any more time for you. And just like that show, The Apprentice, I have no problem saying you're fired. I have no problem with it. And it's tough to do, especially with people you've known 10, 15, 20 years. But if they're not making progress and they're holding you back, what's the point?
Exactly. And if you're the smartest guy in the room, it sounds like you probably need to find another room to be in, right?
I got boots for you, brother. If I'm the smartest guy in the room, they need to get a new room.
So, yeah, no, I totally agree with what you're saying there. And you mentioned a couple of things, that your morning routine and that circle of influence that you talked about. And these are topics that you talk about in your book, Roger Up. And so tell us about the book. Tell us what the book's all about and why it's important to have a circle of influence in the morning routine and things like that.
Sure. So real quickly, I'll mention why the book is entitled Roger Up. So most people are probably familiar with the term Roger Up. It essentially confirms a transmission, and people have all heard, watching MASH or any military movie, they've heard Roger That. So back in the Army, I was on a really long, we had a few mandatory 12-mile rucks per year. I think there were three of them in our unit at the battalion level, if I'm not mistaken. But once a year, we had a 18-mile ruck, and it was timed and it was competitive. The 12-milers were timed as well, and I always wanted to compete. But the 18-miler was tough. And I was a very skinny guy. I was 6'2", about 165 pounds. I was a twig. And I, for some reason, logistics within the platoon, at that point in time, was one of the 60 gunners. And that hog weighs 21.7 pounds, I believe. So let's call it 22 pounds. Now, I've got a 35-pound ruck on. Back those days, we had the LBEs. So it's essentially full battle rattle without the mags, and I'm carrying this 22-pound hog around. And right around mile 14, I was done, bro. I was smoked. Just like, I needed to hear the Rocky music. I was like, something, I'm done. And my platoon sergeant came up to me and he's like, what's going on? I said, hey, Sergeant, I'm smoked, man. And I had every excuse in the book, just like you were talking about earlier, not wanting to go for the run. It's real nice and warm and toasty under these covers. Why get up and go run out when it's chilly? I made every excuse in the book, and he looked at me. He said, man, you need to Roger the fuck up. We got 4 miles left. Let's get it. And I wasn't going to let that guy down. And that was the hardest 4 miles of my life. And after that term, Roger Up, which I had never heard before, just was like seared. It was like tattooed on me. I looked like Post Malone without the tattoos. It was like, that was my mantra. That was my thing. And I carried that through, and I've gone back to that moment many times in my life when I've made mistakes or made maybe not the best decisions, whether it was in relationships or financially or with businesses or whatever. And I've always tried to go back to that Roger Up mantra. And that became the book. And we just kind of put all those principles in there. And I asked Jason Redmond, and he kindly wrote the foreword to it. He's a New York Times bestselling author. So, and I talk about how I met him and how I got a guy with 2 books on the New York Times bestseller list and a retired 21 years, Navy SEAL veteran at the highest level, who was shot in the face and survived over 40 surgeries. There's a History Channel show about him. He's been on every top podcast, and he's a prolific speaker. And this guy's one of my really close friends now and still a mentor. And I talk about how to get into those circles, because once you develop enough trust with these mentors, you start getting access to their circle. Slowly but surely. It's like, they'll give you a little bit. They'll give you some scraps. Right. Before you know it, all of a sudden, like, you're running around with the big dogs. And I look at some of the names on this event I put together, and I'm just like, I'm just so blown away and humbled that all these people want to be involved, because I think they know what we're trying to do. And but getting back to the book, that's all it was. It was the book I wish I had when I was 17. And there's some material in there that may not be applicable necessarily to a 17-year-old. But at the end of the day, I just wrote it. I put the truth out there. And the truth isn't always easy to speak. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I'm probably going to continue to make mistakes. But that's part of growth. You live and you learn. And just kind of put myself out there. And it was as nice as it is to see bestseller on Amazon and all that shit. And I'm not downplaying it. It's cool, and it's something I'm very proud of, and it's great. But none of those accolades, none of the stuff, and the fact that it's been really a springboard for a speaking career and putting on events like this and stuff like that has been amazing. But what writing that book did for me was more therapeutic than anything the VA times 1,000 could ever prescribe.
Right.
It was like, when you really put yourself out there, it's one thing. When you put it down on paper and you put it out there for everyone to read, And now they know, wow, it's not all rainbows and unicorns. This guy's a little fucked up. He's been through some stuff and he struggled with some stuff and he talks about that. And yeah. And I think I encourage everyone to write a book, whether you should publish it or not. two years later, brother, I'm still deciding whether or not that was a good idea for me. My wife and I have this conversation from time to time, but she encouraged me to, she contributed to it as well, but she encouraged me to push a little further. There were areas where I kind of pumped the brakes a little bit, and I think she encouraged me to just step on the gas and go all in. You're already this far.
Yeah, and that's, again, stepping outside of your comfort zone. You wrote something that, you know, as a first-time author myself, I know putting all that out there, putting your dirty laundry out there, putting all the dark stuff in your life out there in a book that not only are your friends and family going to read, but complete strangers are going to read. They're going to form opinions about you. They're going to start thinking things about you. And hopefully at the end of the day, they read the book and they come out better off for reading that book. Yeah. And that's, I think, what we all hope for when we sit down and write these books. So I think everyone has a story to tell. You don't need to be a Medal of Honor recipient or a 15-time combat veteran or whatever. You don't need to have all of these accolades and all these other things. Everyone has a story to tell. And there's nothing stopping you from sitting down and telling your story, as little as you think you may have done, in whether it's in your military career or you're just in life in general. You have a story to tell, and there's something that can be learned from that. And if you don't, I challenge you to take a deep look at your life and look at some of the things that you've maybe failed at, and I try to identify what those lessons were and how you've changed and how you've improved over time. And I bet you'll find a story in there somewhere, right?
1,000%. I tell people all the time, write down the top 10 biggest failures in your life. There's at least two books in there.
For sure.
And the good news is, if you're still around, and if some of those were massive, like you overcame heroin addiction or alcoholism, or you survived sexual abuse as a child, or you were raped, or you overcame some horrific accident from a car accident or a fall or whatever, if you write that list of 10 failures out, if you're still here to talk about it, like, guess what, man, you've made progress. Like,
right.
Not at that point anymore, because if you overcame heroin, which is not, I've never tried heroin, but I know, unfortunately, plenty of guys that have, because the Vicodins were too hard to keep up with.
Yeah.
The VA was throwing 120 at him a month, and I had a friend that was taking 25 to 30 a day, and he had to manage four or five different scripts that people were giving for him. And then he realized, wow, heroin's so much cheaper. I can do this. And guess what else I'll do? I'll shoot it up between my toes so no one knows I'm doing it, because I live in a hot climate and I always have a t-shirt on. So I won't have any marks on my arms. I'm very isolated already as it is, and everyone knows my personality to be that way. So who's ever going to know I'm hooked on heroin? And thank God we found out and we got to it and had a little bit of an old school platoon reunion, if you will. And that guy is thriving now. And I'm pretty sure he's in the process of finishing up a book, so I'm not going to say his name, but amazing guy, someone I love with all my heart, deployed with, I consider a brother. And yeah, it's a terrible drug. And I have several friends that are unfortunately on that list of 22 guys or gals a day that unfortunately throw in the towel too soon. And heroin was, I think, three of them. And it's because the opiates got out of control and heroin was cheaper. And it's just a real shame, man. So everyone, you're right. Everyone has a story. Everyone should write it. Now, whether you decide to tuck that away in a box in the basement and bury it under 3 feet of cement is on you. Or if you want to go out there and self-publish it for free and put it on Amazon, that's on you. But just sitting down and taking pencil or pen to paper and writing about it, I cannot express to you what it's done for me and how therapeutic it is, just putting yourself out there. It's one thing to look in the mirror and say some shit to yourself and judge yourself, but guess what? It's a matter of 5, 10, maybe 20 seconds. Or in my case, if you're really vain and pay a lot of attention to your hair, maybe 40 seconds, until you walk away from that mirror then it's done. Then you're on with your day. You're having a coffee, you're meeting your friends, you're going out, you're going to work, you're doing whatever. But would you write that down? Same thing as goal setting. You can talk about all the goals you want. Would you write them down and put them out there and have someone hold you accountable? That's where the real work begins. So I tell everyone, man, write your book, write your story. You don't have to publish it, but write it. It will help change you and make you a better person. So dude, I agree with everything you've said, man.
Absolutely. So with that said, where can people go to get a copy of your book, Roger Up?
Amazon's the best place, man. Okay. I know they're like a $17 trillion company. They're probably going to buy Mars before Elon flies his rockets there. But yeah, man, Amazon's, as you all know, a pretty big online store. So just go to Amazon. We've got the Kindle version and we've got the print version. And then on rare occasion when I'm at events like the big Roger Up event we're doing September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd here in Chicago, I'll have books for sale there. But that's the best place is Amazon.
Excellent. Yeah. So I'll have a link to that in the show notes. But I also want to let you have a chance to tell people where they can go to support the Resilient Warrior Foundation, whether it's through donations or I'm not sure if you guys need volunteers or whatnot, whatever it is that you need, let people know where they can go to help out.
Yeah. And thank you so much for letting me plug that. It's obviously something that's really close to my heart. So resilientwarriorfoundation.org, and you can make donations on there. We have all kinds of swag that we sell, whether it's coffee mugs or t-shirts or whatever. Everything goes to the veterans or first responders. No one on our board takes salary. All of us are 100% volunteers. We post everything online. We're fully transparent. This is truly now I'm not saying there's not going to come a day when things get crazier, when we're going to have to hire someone. And it's just the hard truth and the growth process of becoming busier and actually having to hire someone to do all the work. But right now we're busy, but we're still holding it down. No one has paid a single penny. Every dollar that you donate is going towards managing everything and getting these guys and gals training in schools all over the country. And I'll just mention, because they've done some great things for us, another nonprofit that we work with is GIS, or GIs. So if you've never trained before and your school allows it, you come and sign up with Resilient Warrior Foundation and we get you good to go and going, then I'll get you a free GI too. So, and even if your school gives you a GI or they have you buy one, it's always good to have more than one GI, unless you're just training once a month. Because three things for new jiu-jitsu people. One, show up on time. Two, wear deodorant and have a clean gi. And three, cut your fingernails and your toenails. I still have a cut on the side of this eye from some knucklehead's big toe. I mean, I don't know if he was from like the caveman days or what, but this guy had toenails like a saber-toothed tiger. I got slashed right here. So if you're going to start jiu-jitsu, always smell good, always be positive, always be on time to class, and cut your damn fingernails and toenails, and your school will have no problems with you.
Sounds good. Well, I will have links to all of this in the show notes. So resilientwarriorfoundation.org. I'll have links to the book on Amazon and where people can go to donate and help out the Resilient Warrior Foundation. So thank you again, Brent, for coming on. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you and learning about everything that you do and how jiu-jitsu really is a great tool that people can use to help combat their own PTSD. So thanks again for coming on and joining me.
Yeah. And thank you for having me, man. And like I say, unfortunately, the nature of these podcasts, I know you're the interviewer and I'm the interviewee, but I just want to say for everyone that's watching this, because I'm going to be sharing this with every platform I have, please go and check out this guy's stuff. His story is absolutely awesome. He's a veteran himself. His brother was a veteran. There's just an amazing story there. And if you look over his right shoulder, you will see that incredible American flag perfectly rolled into a triangle in that box. And we know what that represents. And that is something that is more humbling to me than anything else on this planet. And so I know what you've got going on, man, and I'm honored to be on your podcast. And maybe we'll have the chance to speak again sometime. And more of the people that follow me and have read my book and watch some of my content, we'll get an opportunity to hear about your story and your book, because I know we're already at like, see, here's the cool thing about podcasts, everyone. Beforehand, me and the man talked for about 5 or 6 minutes. It's like a little first date. And he's like, so you got any questions? And I'm like, yeah, how long are we going to go? And he's like, 30. Well, we're right now at 41. So this is called the reeling. I'm a sailfish and I keep fighting, trying to get back out. And he's reeling me in. So I'll stop talking. It's been a real pleasure, man. And again, for anyone that's watching this, that's someone that follows me or has read my book or is attending the event or anything like that, please check out this gentleman's stuff. We'll make sure that he puts it into the link as well, because he's got an awesome book. He's a first-time author like myself. He's a proud veteran like myself, and his story and his brother's story is absolutely incredible, and it's stuff that people need to hear, and it's inspirational. So thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you again. I do appreciate your time coming on the show and sharing everything that you shared. So thanks for everything.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.